This is Talking Dirty, Get Gardening's podcast for plant lovers. The video version is available on our Get Gardening YouTube channel, so you can head over there if you want to see our ugly mugs, and there are pictures of the plants there as well. There are full plant lists on our Twitter and Instagram at Get Gardening Now, so go check those out. But without further ado, let's start talking dirty. Hello and welcome to Talking Dirty, another of our specials talking about East Ruston Old Vicarage, that glorious 32-acre garden on the Norfolk coast. At aforementioned garden, we have my fabulous co-presenter, Alan Edward Herbert Gray, our happy and very handsome horticulturalist in many stripes and some squiggles. And I'm not entirely sure what, but it's navy and white and very smart.
It's John Smedley. No, it isn't. Yes, it is. Hello, Lourdes. How are you? Beaming over in Cambridgeshire on what I believe is a somewhat sort of drippy day with you. Oh. Here we don't have any precipitation for the next 60 minutes. So I'm sitting in the dry until I've finished with you, and then I go outside and get wet. Hey-ho, such is life.
Yes, we've not timed this especially well. Alan's all tucked up when he doesn't need to be. Mind you, I mean, I'm sure there's plenty of potting shed type activities that we'll talk about in just a moment as we get properly stuck into all the glorious things going on in the garden. But I must say a massive thank you to everyone who tuned in to our first forays back into the world of gardening radio. We're recording this a few days after our first programme back on your BBC local radio. If you happen to be based in Norfolk, Suffolk and Cambridge, then it's on Sunday on your kind of FM, DAB, all of that between 11 and 1 every Sunday with Alan, myself and a glittering array of gardeners from across East Anglia. But if you happen to be abroad or in any other part of the UK, then it's all on BBC Sounds. And I've popped a link in my Instagram profile. So if you go to Thunder Fairy on Instagram, then you can just click and there are various different links, but one of them is Sunday show. And then you can fast forward the first hour if you wish and get into the gardening phone in between 11 and 1. Not just a phone in, of course, lots of general gardening chat. And you can send in questions. And oh, it was just so much fun, Alan. It was wonderful to be reunited.
Well, it really was, because it's like sort of, you know, suddenly you're back in your little safety bubble. We had Ian Roof with us and, of course, the inimitable Joe from Monkshilver Nursery, who's a fount of knowledge, as is Ian. Both of them are, in actual fact. And I just felt so lovely to be in that bubble with you all. And I tell you what amazed me, and it was this sheer number of people that got in touch. I don't know how people knew, but we had people arriving in the car park here saying to Graham on the car park, you know, we've just been listening to Alan. We're so glad they're back. And, you know, and other people in the garden coming up and saying, somebody told me you've been on the radio.
Yeah.
Well, we didn't know. So, you know, we think it was busy this Sunday, but in coming Sundays, it could be even busier once people get to know where we are and get to find us.
We could do with them, as many of you as possible, because there's a little bit of a jostle, not a jostle, but we've got to play some music. And we would all rather just talk about gardening. This is, you know, I'm probably not supposed to say this, so don't tell any BBC bosses. But the more of you that listen, the more likely it is that we can prove gardening content is what people are after. So please tune in. Yeah. And you can also just find it on the BBC Radio Cambridgeshire, Norfolk and Suffolk schedules, you know, online if you want to listen again. And because, you know, we always found this with gardening radio, a bit like podcasting, you sometimes want to listen to it when it works for you, not when it's on the radio. So you can, you know, send a question in by email. We've got an email set up, gardenparty@bbc.co.uk. And then you just listen back at your leisure. And fingers crossed, we do our very best to fit all the questions in. It proved tricky in the first one. It may prove trickier going forward, but we will do our absolute best to answer your questions. So you can listen at your leisure on a rainy evening when you're not busy in the garden and just enjoy some gardening chat and hopefully get your horticultural conundrum figured out by the experts. I can't wait.
And you get a little bit of fun in there too when we get tongue-tied and things like that. And I was just going to say the other thing is to everybody listening to this podcast, please tell your friends and acquaintances about us, because, you know, the more listeners we have, the better it is for everybody. And always remember that no question is too silly, because, you know, there was a lady came to the garden here once and she wanted a particular plant, but she didn't know how to say it. And so she said, I want an abutilon. And I said, I think you mean abutilon, but I said, I understood you, so that's all that matters. Don't feel embarrassed by it, for goodness sake, because we all have to get used to the way things are pronounced. And I still, well, Ian says to me quite frequently, Ian Roof says to me quite frequently, you are perverse, because if I say clematis, you will say clematis. If I say hemerocallis, you say hemerocallis. It's and I
I
do
feel
it
a song
deliberately.
coming on.
Yeah, I do. I do it deliberately because it's done to try and make people feel that there is no absolute correct way of doing it, as long as we understand each other. That's the most important thing.
And I can trot out one of my favorite quotes that I've almost certainly used on this podcast before, which is, you should never make fun of somebody for how they say something if they say it wrong, because they almost certainly learned it from reading. And we should never make fun of people
Yes.
for reading. So you've only come across a name in a gardening book. How on earth are you ever supposed to know? And none of us really know. We're just following the crowd anyway. It's mostly Latin, and who's got a clue about that? Sadly, no Romans alive to tell us. Now, on with the plants. Onwards with what's going on at East Ruston Old Vicarage. Last time on this podcast, we had a species tulip special, thanks to the Cambridge University Botanic Garden. I thoroughly enjoyed that. And I'm sure East Ruston resplendent with many a lovely tulip species hybrid. I suppose a lot of the species one's gone over, but you always have tons of tulips.
Yeah, I mean, I do have tons of tulips, and I think that just to touch on what you said there, reference to it while it's fresh in my mind, hybrid tulips, there's masses of those, and they are big and blousy and bold and brassy and all of those kind of things. And I have to say that my immediate feeling after having done a job, which I'll tell you about in a minute, this weekend, is that I will go over to using species tulips more. Possibly not in pots and big containers, because they're the kind of things that, that's where you use tulips. You take them out when they finish flowering. What you do with them after that is up to you. But, basically these big hybrid bulbs are beefed up and by the bulb growers to make them big and give a big flower the first year. And then, unless we really know how to treat them to build them up again, they probably diminish a little bit. Hybrid tulips do eventually sort of fade out. Although, having said that, there's a little, I've forgotten what they're called now, but they've got crinkly edges, these tulips, and there is a name for the type. There's a group of about five of them in the front courtyard here, and they've been there about 7 years, and they keep getting spades put through them when I'm digging, but they still persist. So how perverse is that? But no, I think in the garden in general, I shall go over more to using species tulips. And I think with diligence and research, you can find them from the very, very early ones. And they do start flowering as early as February. Although, the weather is a bit rough then, probably, to have them. But March, April, and into May. And we know the latest flower to flower, the latest tulip to flower, don't we, Thordis?
Sprengeri.
Sprengeri. That's the one. Yeah, it's absolutely a wonderful tulip. We've said enough about that. So let's cut the cackle on that.
You
But
do a
what
whole
I was doing
podcast.
was. I was we've talked a lot about bulb planting in the autumn, and we were talking about lasagna planting in layers of various varieties and various types of bulbs. And I don't do a huge amount of layering, but probably two or three. And the two are hyacinths in the top layer, because they tend to flower first, and then a tulip below that, and another tulip below that, and sometimes another tulip below that if the container is big enough. And I tend to want my tulips to slightly overlap. So I do an early, a medium flowering, and a late flowering, because that increases the length of season from 2 weeks to 6 weeks, shall we say. But anyway, I was going through my tulips as they're just changing colour, and they were spoiled. The pots looked a mess. Why? Because the hyacinths had gone over, and they'd gone brown, and they'd gone horrible. And it's not a nice job, because hyacinths, the sap that comes from hyacinths and the texture of their blooms, and they've got sodden wet in recent days and started to rot a little bit, and it makes them all sticky. Ugh. So you really want a pair of gloves on to do the job. Anyway, took all the hyacinth heads off, and a lady came into the garden who works in the tea room here. And she came in on Sunday, and she said to me, "You changed your pots." I said, "Have I?" She said, "Yes. You filled them full of tulips. They had hyacinths in last week." And I said, "Well, I haven't really changed them. I've just removed the dead flowers." "Well, how is that?" So I then had to explain what lasagna planting means. And you know, that's just the way it is. But it does pay if you've got containers like that, to remove the dead flowers off the first ones that go over, because it mars the display thereafter. So that's what I was doing.
I know that you sometimes will buy in a general mix of tulips to do a mass planting, but are there specific varieties that you've been going for that you've been impressed by in your displays this year?
I'll tell you, the one display that I have been impressed by is Parker's Dutch Bulbs, or Parker's Wholesale. Anybody can buy from them, by the way, if you're wondering about that. And you can buy in multiples of 10. And if you buy 100, it's much cheaper. And if you buy 1,000, it's even cheaper, although it's more expensive pro rata. But you know, anyway, their red mix, I was absolutely thrilled with it. It's a mixture of reds, pinks, plummy colours. And if you really want to be, shall we say, outstandingly naughty, you can take their red mix, and you will get a picture in their catalogue or online. You'll get a picture of what the red mix looks like, and it is absolutely as it should look, because I've got a whole border of them up here at here in East Rusden, where the dahlias are in the summer. You can actually add then your own colour. You can add a black tulip if you wish, or something like that, or you can add a white one, or you can add a green one. You know, you can add whatever you like. I wouldn't add yellow, but then if you want to, why not? Your choice
Why
is
not? It's
yours.
your garden.
Yeah.
Now, it doesn't seem to be quite as bad with you as it is with me, but definitely a day to be holed up in the potting shed if you were in Cambridgeshire. And you have been spending, as you always are, a lot of time propagating, cutting seeds. What have you been up to on that front at East Ruston?
Well, I've been sowing an awful lot of seeds. I sowed, I think, probably 12 trays of seed yesterday, and they were seed that I'd found from previous years. Now, I don't know whether they're going to be viable or not, but I have kept them cool and kept them dark and kept them safe. So hopefully they will be, but you know, if they're not, it doesn't really matter. I've been saving some more recent, sowing some more recently bought seed this morning of a tall growing purple amaranthus, which is a relative of Lovelies Bleeding, if people know that. And lots of these amaranthus are grown as food crops in South America. And it's from South America that they've come across to be probably first used in the cut flower industry, because, you know, they've got long stems with lots of side shoots and these feathery blossoms, and they're in shades of green and pale pink, dark red, plum, and biscuit. There's one called Hot Biscuits, which I love. And it looks like the colour of a ginger biscuit, you know, that rich rufous colour. And they're terribly useful as dot plants and for fillers in the garden. And the ones I've been sowing grow more than a metre tall, probably metre and a half, something like that. So, you know, 6, 7 feet, shall we say. So you can be put at the back, and they can be used all everywhere throughout the garden. And they're very useful things.
The observant and very unobservant among you may have noticed that we've had a little change of scenery for Alan. So the internet fell over. He's, if you're lucky watching the video version, he has relocated to the office where, fingers crossed, the internet will be on our side. We were right in the middle of talking about the amaranthus you had been sowing, and what happens next, I suppose.
I mean, I've learned this through trial and error, but you know, most seedlings, if you don't prick them out immediately they're ready, they start to go backwards. In other words, they suffer a check in their growth. And sometimes they just don't get over that. Or you don't get as big a plant as you hope you're going to get. But with amaranthus, the reverse is true, because they actually hold in their seed trays very well. And I've learned that, you know, I think, oh, gosh, I should prick those out. And 2 weeks later, I've gone back to the tray and thought, oh, I really must do this. And then I've gone back again a week later and I've done it. And I thought that it's probably too late, but it isn't. They just romp away as soon as they've got the feet into some fresh compost. And quite often what I do with them at that stage is I clump prick them out. So I don't prick out the individual seedlings. I prick them out into little clumps of 3, 5, 7, or whatever however they fall. And you know, within 4 weeks, they're ready and big enough to go out in the garden. So they're a forgiving plant, but it's a good one to grow. Any amaranthus are fit for this. They're all good ones to grow for filling in later in the season. And as we go through the season, you probably notice that you will find gaps in your borders and beds and all the rest of it. And so you'll need fillers, and that's what they're good for.
So this podcast is becoming a little bit like different scene changes and a theatre play or something. Each different chapter of the podcast. We have a slightly different device or setting in Alan's house, but fingers crossed, this one will provide us with strong enough internet to get to the end of the East Rusted Old Vicarage April special. Now, we were just talking about seeds. I believe you have been sowing some, well, you said you'd sown some older seeds that you'd found you didn't know about their whether they were going to actually germinate. But one of the things you found, was it some sort of East Ruston or Vicarage sweet peas?
It was. It was an envelope containing a special seed mix from old East Ruston Old Vicarage, or EROV. And I don't know whether these seeds are viable, but I took them down just before lunch and I put water. I leave them in there for 24 hours and just see if they swell up. And if they swell up, I'll sow them. And if they germinate, they do. And if they don't, the pots go back onto the compost heap. So that's all right. But just interesting to see. I think it's always interesting with seeds, if you have them for more than the allotted length of time of their viability, especially on seed packets, because often today it says so by the end of 2024, for instance. If you discover them in 2020, them and see, because even if you only get four or five, at least it's something. And quite often you'd be surprised, I think.
The idea of soaking your sweet peas, I've seen people on social media saying they can't be bothered to soak their peas. I have and I haven't. I've never analysed whether it has any influence. But in Googling it, I have read some people believe certain shades have a kind of harder surface to the seed and require soaking. I have no idea whether that's true either. But you clearly are soaking yours.
I've always done it, you see. I think this is one of the things. And I do remember several years ago reading that Sarah Raven no longer soaks her sweet peas. And, you know, she dismissed it as being completely unnecessary, which it might be. But it's always worked for me. And I think that's probably why I still do it. But do bear in mind that if you're sowing seeds, or if you're planting a corm such as anemones, you know, when you get an anemone corm out of the packet that it arrives, horrible little thing. You can't tell whether it's top or bottom, Arthur or Martha. You know, you can't tell anything about it at all. And so you get this thing, and it just looks like something that the dog has done, and it's shriveled up. It's really quite repulsive. But if you soak them for 24 hours, they come out of the soak as being all plumped up and smooth skinned and everything else. And I did it with some very dark flowered anemones, which are just about to flower. It's the coronaria type. One that has the Beaujolais coloured, purpley, maroony coloured outside and a blue middle, which is so beguiling. Looks lovely.
I love those.
So I think it's worthwhile soaking something, because if you plant an anemone, for instance, as a sweet pea seedling, it will take time for the moisture to penetrate that outer coating. And so what you're doing by soaking your sweet pea seeds or your anemone corms is you're rushing that little bit.
Talking of exciting seeds in envelopes, I was up the allotment seeing what might have started to germinate from things I have been sowing, you know, last autumn. And there's been a tiny bit of sowing this spring. I mean, too early, but if I've got a lot of seed of something and I've got some fleece, I've been having a go with some salad. So I had some dill germinate, but then the dog leapt all over it for some unknown reason. So that's had a bit of a battering. That was not my most successful moment at the allotment. But the most exciting thing is right by the label that says Smyrnium, I think I might have some Smyrnium germinating that you sent me in an envelope from East Ruston Old Vicarage last year. But I've never grown it before. So it's just cotyledons at the minute. It's just seed leaves. So I'm waiting for a true leaf.
The cotyledons are long and narrow and very shiny.
Oh, it's promising. Fingers crossed. Yeah. It's right by the label. So it does seem like it might actually be a Smyrnium perfoliatum, glorious, acidy, zingy, spring-like thing. So I've always wanted it. Finally, I might actually get it.
It's one of those plants, Smyrnium perfoliatum, that's very difficult because it's wonderful when it's growing and it's coming into flower. But once it starts to go over, people are loath to get rid of it. It's a bit like my mother. You know, I used to take her a bunch of flowers occasionally and I'd say to her, you know, mother, those flowers have seen better days. It's time to let them go. And she said, oh, darling, just one more day. And I mean, they're looking horrible, but...
That's me.
You do that. Well, you know, Smyrnium is the same thing. Once it starts to look slightly past its best, Thank goodness they don't do this to the human race. It's best to just get rid of the lot. But do remember to save a few seeds for future generations.
Well, I'm excited. Fingers crossed I'll be able to save my own seed in future years if it actually grows and flowers and does its thing. Other things going on at East Ruston Old Vicarage. I believe you have some very nice tropeolums doing their thing under glass.
Well, I've got two. I mean, I've got the wonderful, wonderful tricolorum, which has flowers that look a little bit like goldfish or parrots, I suppose, in a funny sort of way. And they're sort of red and they've got a bit of yellow on them, little black lips and things like that. But they just scramble up this tiny little vine-like thing, scrambles and scrambles and scrambles, and it would probably go up to 3 meters if it's got the stuff to climb up, support. But mine doesn't do that because I keep it fairly low so I can move it about. And they're up to probably about a meter and a bit. And they just keep going and going and going and filling them, you know, filling themselves with flower. I've got another one called Hookeriana, which you very kindly named for me. I don't know, were you reading about it or something?
I saw it on Emma Crawford's Instagram. Glorious, purpley coloured flowers. I think it comes in yellow as well. I haven't quite dug down into the nitty gritty of the naming.
It does, but it was given to me as a blue tropiolum. Well, it certainly isn't blue, but I mean, you know, we know this in the world of flowers and plants, that plants, when they're often labelled blue, they're more mauve than they are blue. And this is one of those. So, I mean, if it's variable, I mean, it could be anything, I don't know. And, there may yet be variations. Trouble is with both of these, they don't set seed, but they do make tubers underneath the ground. And the thing is to get those tubers up and dry them off as soon as the top of the plant starts to die down, get the tubers up, dry them off, keep them somewhere cool and dark, and then replant them, probably in about July, late July, something like that. And you just wait, and miraculously, these funny little tendrils come out of the soil. They look like wispy little bits of nothing. And, you know, if you've got your supports there, suddenly they start to cling onto the supports, and then the leaves start to form and all the rest of it. It's lovely. But they are very useful if you've got room under glass this time of the year. I don't think they need that much heat, if any. I had a friend that used to grow Tropelium tricolorum in a cold greenhouse, and it got to the stage where it'd go over the roof of her greenhouse. And, you know, it looked absolutely lovely. Her house was really an alpine house, so because it had no heat in it at all.
I have heard the same about Pentaphyllum and the wonderful Jane Ann Walton, who we featured on here, who many of you follow because her garden is just full of wonderful plants. She was sharing how she keeps meaning to hack back Pentaphyllum because it's basically completely covering everything else that's growing in her cold conservatory. She said there's a plumbago underneath there somewhere. And it's just underneath this blanket of Pentaphyllum. But how anyone could bring themselves to cut back this glorious tropiolum that has I mean, I think Pentaphyllum might be my favourite. These like speckle-throated green and pink little pixie-like flowers. It's absolute magic. It's one of my favourite things. I killed mine because I couldn't.
Well, you can have another one because I've got some. I grow mine outside, in actual fact, here. They don't look as wonderful as Jane Anne's does in her conservatory because that little modicum of shelter makes all the difference. But I've got them on the corner of the laundry room, in actual fact, and they're scrambling up. And they're scrambling into other climbers, and there's a whole little mass of buds there just waiting to open, little pink buds waiting to open. So we're looking forward to that. But the other thing about them is, of course, Pentaphyllum makes tubers, and they look like creased old nuts almost, nutshells, and they gradually sort of creep up to the ground, and then they're at ground level. So when you want to increase your stock of Pentaphyllum, you just root around at ground level and pull some of the old tubers out, pop them up, and Bob's your uncle, off you go.
Can't believe more people don't have Pentaphyllum in their lives. Talking of things with interesting flowers, though slightly different interesting, you were posting about a jasmine the other day that was doing quite a snazzy thing.
Well, it is. And well, there's a tale to it, actually, because a friend of mine gave me a plant of jasmine, jasmine polyanthemum, the one that we grow, you know, sold under the wire hoops at Christmas time to give mummy something to put on the table that's scented and white flowers and all the rest of it. Somebody bought me one which has pink buds and pink tinged flowers, and I've just noticed that the one I've got in the house, I have a series of them, and I bring them into the house just after Christmas, and then about every 3 weeks thereafter, for as many plants as I have. And the latest one I brought into the house has, you know, clusters of pure white flowers with white outsides and green outsides, and clusters of pink flowers with pink outsides and pink blush petals on the inside on the same plant. And I've checked this. There is only one main stem going into the top of the soil. So it's obviously sporting. And I presume it's the white one that's sporting the pink flowers. And then somebody has taken the pink, a pink flower cutting, if you like. And, you know, that's how it works.
Yeah.
It's a bit like pelargoniums. They often do this. You'll have a pink pelargonium and it'll suddenly throw a white flowered shoot, or red foot, wherever, and it does the same. It's sporting.
Yeah, does the rose iceberg do this? I seem to remember from when I was little, my mum had a white iceberg, David Austin rose, I think it might be, in her garden. And every so often, no, it would throw a
I
pink
think iceberg
one.
Came from
Peter Beals?
I think iceberg. No, I think it came from Le Gris.
Oh, Le Gris. Oh, that would make sense. Norfolk, Le Gris, yeah.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not a big white flower person, really, so I've never looked it up or been interested in buying it again. But I do have this strong memory of being young, and every so often, iceberg would just have a pink rose. And I don't know if that was...
Well, the other thing is you might be aware, mightn't have been aware of then, was the fact that iceberg flowers, as they age, take on a pink tinge.
Ah, maybe it was that. It was
so
a long time ago. I don't care
well,
to mention.
So talking of roses, I've just planted two plants with the Generous Gardener.
Oh yes,
it's a rose. That is a David Austin rose, and it's one that I've been meaning to grow for many, many years. And I just I had it for my birthday, so I thought, well, this is lovely. You know, we'll get this in the ground and get it going. I saw it in a friend's garden, and it just bowled me over. I thought absolutely lovely, because she is a very fastidious gardener. And it was immaculate. There were no holes in the leaves. The leaves were shiny and light reflecting, and it was wonderful. It was groomed to perfection. No pests, no diseases. Whether it looked like that here or not, I don't know.
It's interesting, the gardens of fastidious people. Well, she's not my mother-in-law, but, you know, her garden is much more park-like than any garden I would ever have. I mean, it's a lot bigger than mine, for starters, but, you know, just really nice crisp beds, and she's got a glorious display of the lovely perennials, Darwin tulips, and lots of, you know, pyracantha against the fence that's got a lovely glossy background, and colourful berries in autumn and all of that. And she is very organised, much more organised than me. And because her garden's long, the end of it is a kind of veg patch, and it's there's also a hospital bed. So anytime she spots that her daffodils or tulips need a bit of extra TLC, she digs them up, pops them in a well-fed hospital bed, and they recuperate, and then she puts them back into the garden. Just such organisation. I will never be like that.
There's something else I would say to that, and that is life's too short to stuff mushrooms.
Oh, but the satisfaction to nurse them back to health. It reminded me of, like, when you're a child and you have teddy bear hospital or something, and you nurse your dollies back.
We used to have chicken hospitals when I was a child, because we had chickens on the farm, and, you know, quite often they'd get a big bunion on their feet or something, and we used to put them in. They didn't need to be in hospital at all, because they're perfectly all right. It was just that they got old. But we used to convince ourselves we were nursing them back to health. Whether it ever worked or not, I don't know.
I always love insight into young Alan Gray. I would have loved to have met you in your. Can you imagine? I bet you are such a little imp. I really do. There's something else we wanted to talk about. You're a butylon vitifolium.
A butylon vitifolium. Well, there are various name clones of this. There's a white form and a very dark purple form. But a butylon vitifolium, a few things that people should know about. First of all, it is it's a member of the Malva family. It's not a long-lived plant, so don't expect to buy one and they will last for 10 years. It might give you 5 to 7, and then you might be all right. But the other thing that I think you need to know about it is immediately it's finished flowering, because it's such a gawky grower, you really need to prune it, but don't prune it too hard. So in June, when it's finished flowering, you cut back the stems and leave a little bit of leafage on each stem. And it gives it, it then restores its balance so that it makes it a nice bushy specimen for the following year. And notice I didn't say years, because there might not be years, there might just be a year. but it's a great self-seeding plant, at least in the garden here. I noticed some seedlings this morning of it. And then if you dig them up and pot them, you know, they make perfectly good plants for giving away to friends and everything, but you can't determine the colour. And it's interesting because the one with the white flowers, the name variety with the white flowers, and all those that start off pale mauve, and as the mauve gets darker, the flower gets smaller. So the largest flowers are the palest colours, and then they get smaller and smaller. But they're still very much worth having. And I've got one that's just opening in the front courtyard this morning, which has quite deep flowers. It's a very good plant. Now, I've got to remember to prune it in June.
Note to self. Well, it's been a joy. I must say, one of the real delights about having changed the angle so many times is we're getting a phenomenal view of your ceiling. And what a ceiling it is.
Well, yeah, that was designed by Graham. And I mean, he loves playing with architectural bits and pieces, as you know. I don't know whether you can quite see this, but if I swing it round a wee, wee bit, you can probably see a cabinet there. And the
yes.
cabinet's got the same. Got red silk behind the grills in the doors to match the beams on the ceiling there. And he designed all this and had the cabinets made and everything else. So, yeah, it's keeping local people employed, isn't it?
Yeah, well, and if you're not watching the video version, if you're listening to the audio, it's this phenomenal beamed roof where you've got the beams are painted in red, and then the sort of panelling behind is white, and every fifth board is black. So it's all black, white, and red, and it's got a sort of Eastern flair about it. It's really fabulous. What we wouldn't expect anything
clever,
less from you and Graham. He is clever, isn't he? Unbelievably
yes.
clever. No one person deserves to be as good as he is at as many things as he is.
He's in the same room. I shouldn't say any more. He won't get out of the door. Can I just make a mention of one thing? And it's Drimmis Winteri.
Oh,
because Drimmis Winteri, I've told this tale many times, but 45 years ago, we were in Cornwall and Devon on a holiday, and I bought a plant from Vern Coos and Southdown Nurseries, as it was then, of Drimmis Winteri. And the chap said to me when he was gathering my plants up and topping up the bill, there was more than one, of course. And he said to me, whereabouts are you from? And I said, I'm from Norfolk. He said, well, you'll put that back because it won't grow in Norfolk. And I said, well, I'll risk it. And I risked it. And today it's nearly 40 feet tall and it's an evergreen, but it is head to toe in this wonderful creamy blossom with little green centers to them. And these then go over to be blackberries, which is quite a glamorous shrub, a very, very unusual thing. And it stood up very, very well to the recent gales and high winds that we've had and all the rain that we've had and everything else. And it's just a joy at the moment.
Well, I'm very glad you had an aside about Drimmis Winteri, because it reminded me that I got so distracted by your ceiling, we nearly didn't FLOMO. Can you imagine? Not FLOMO. FLOMO, that fear of missing out you get about a flower or a plant. It's what I absolutely live my whole life doing. And I got so excited, I've just dropped my notebook, which I need, because I don't know this specific variety name off the top of my head. It's a monk silver plant, so Joe Sharman. And it's a bluebell. You may or may not know, Joe Sharman is extremely knowledgeable and keen on bluebells and has spent his life spotting various different sort of strains, I suppose, in woodlands all over the place. And anyway, he has Hyacinthoides nonscripta silver cobalt. Now, this is kind of reminiscent of the Agapanthus queen mum. So, you know, that kind of white... gradienting, I suppose, if that's a word, to blue. So it's white at the bottom of the bell, and then it fades up, the wrong word, it darkens up, blushes blue, bluebell blue towards the tip of the bell. And it is absolutely beautiful. And it was done wonderful justice by Jane Ann Walton, who we already mentioned on Instagram. Stop me in my tracks. Glorious, glorious plant. So that has really given me some serious FLOMO. About you, Mr. Gray.
Mine is much more basic, actually, and it's starting to happen here. And it's to go back to my Granny Gray's days of the polyanthus that she used to grow. Now, when she was alive, she always wanted a blue polyanthus. Alas, she didn't live long enough to ever have one, but she wanted one. And in those days, a polyanthus that was blue was regarded as rare as hen's teeth, a bit like a blue rose, you know. But anyway... I long for the polyanthus that she used to grow, and they were kind of rusty colours and dark oranges, dirty oranges, dirty reds, and all those creamy colors. And they just blended beautifully. This was started by a chance drive. I drove through the village one day and I went past somebody's house, don't know who it was, and they had a mass of polyanthus in the front garden. They were my grandmother's, Granny Gray's polyanthus. And obviously it was probably a person of a certain age, and they grow them from either themselves own seedlings or they save their own seed, and they just keep going and going and going. For some strange reason, we've got one or two plants of that kind of polyanthus growing in the garden here. So I'm going to try and save some seed of those. And the other day when I was going out, we've got primroses along our banks down to the main road along the lane. And there's some purple polyanthus along amongst them. How it got there, I don't know. And some dark red and some orange. not huge numbers, but, you know, they're gradually coming back. So I've got my seed bank going and I'm thinking, oh, come on, let's hurry up.
How exciting.
But polyanthus, they are notoriously long in their germination period. I remember when Granny Gray, we used to go to her little greenhouse, and each day, we used to go once a week, and we would look to see if a new seedling would come up. And once it got big enough, you'd carefully extricate it with an old tea fork, you know, a cake fork, and from its seed bed, and put the seed bed back and wait for further germination. That just reminds me of one thing. Gardeners are an impatient lot, but you know, we have to be patient sometimes, otherwise we don't get any results at all.
Yes, plants are there to teach us patience and also to be resourceful with what we use. And there's nothing quite like a kitchen implement in the garden. There, forks in particular come in very handy. I've peeled
well,
them many
throw
of them.
Anything away.
Well, Alan, it's been a joy as always. I think the sun has actually come out here. There's still a poorly blowing, but fingers crossed it's coming out for you so that when you leave the podcast and go out into the garden, you don't get precipitation arriving at the wrong moment.
Well, I'll tell you what I'm going to do, shall I? When we end this podcast, I'm going back to the house and I'm going to sort through the seeds on the dining room table, which I've completely forgotten about, which just shows you how often I go into the dining room, doesn't it? Oh, dear.
Until next time, I will get to see you on the radio. I look forward to that already. But until our next podcast, happy gardening, everybody.
Happy gardening, everybody. Bye-bye.
Hey, Thordis here. Just to say thank you so much for listening to Talking Dirty. You are now officially our favourite person. If you really liked it, please do subscribe, because we'll be back for more plant-loving mayhem next week. And as you're our new favourite person, we don't want you to miss out. If you've got a question for Alan and the experts, you can email it to hello@getgardeningnow.co.uk. So happy gardening, and we'll see you, oh favourite person, next time.